Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my sisters and my brothers tonight. We thank you for joining us again this Monday night on My Sister, My Friend. We're here as an internet show to undergird, uplift, and encourage our women. We're here to provide information and resources for those women in need. We're here to give the women a voice, a sounding board, in a godly manner. Thank you for joining us again tonight, and we want to give a shout-out to all our friends and all our sister stations. And tonight we have Miss Beverly on the line right now. Say hello, Bev.
Hello, everyone.
And we're back with Miss Carol tonight. Say hello, Miss Carol.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Well, we thank you for joining us tonight, and we're going to go ahead and get into our show tonight. Tonight, we're going to continue our discussion on the police brutality, our young men and their issues, and also we're going to talk a little about the issues in the other states that are going on and the sit-outs and the marches. And to get us started, we're just going to go ahead and turn the show over to Carol and let her give us what she has for us tonight.
All right. Thank you, sister. Good evening, everyone. And so we're going to pick up on our exciting topic that we had last week. It got really good. We got some interesting perspectives from some professional teachers and other young ladies and out there. And our brother called in and talked to us about the issues from a male perspective. So that was really good. So hopefully we'll get some more of that tonight. So just to update us on what's going on with the Ferguson case, now it's new information that's coming out that witnesses that were in the grand jury that were presented before the grand jury had lied. You know, we had some that they have witnesses that didn't actually see the shooting, just was repeating what they said or hear someone say. We have witnesses that have changed their stories. We have testimony that was little to no credibility behind it. There was testimony against the cops that was false because one lady said she just wanted to be a part of something. There was another witness who knew Mike Brown and knew who was shot, just said who knew Mike Brown and then just was on testimony for that, but she just made it up. And then there was a woman, another juror, another witness, witness number 40. She was as a witness presented before the jury. She posted a racist comment on her Facebook the day of the killing that said they need to kill those explicative N words. It's like an ape fest, is what she said.
Mm.
And she was a witness in this thing for the cops, and she also was a false witness. There was another one guy that was consistent with his witness was the man, young man Gary, who was with Mike Brown at the time. His story has been consistent throughout the entire situation. I mean, he's told the truth, the same story over and over and over again, and yet they didn't even, I don't even think they said that they didn't know that they even presented his testimony. There were 62 witnesses total, and what two of the attorneys on the television, CNN, were saying is that one said that what the prosecutor did is he just presented so much information and so many witnesses, people didn't even look at it as credible or telling the truth, just to overwhelm the jury, just to get the verdict that he wanted. So they were overwhelmed because it was, you know, even the jurors were saying, are you sure? I mean, are you sure you saw what you saw? Did you say what you say? And the grand jury was confused. And so they feel like that was his take. That was the approach and the technique he was using to avoid prosecuting the police officer. So, again, we still have continuing issues behind this Mike Brown Ferguson case and the other gentleman, and we have the sports entertainment world that's getting into it with the I Can't Breathe T-shirts that they're wearing as their practice T-shirt before they go in. We had one young football player last night who wore his football jersey on the front that said Justice for Mike Brown. And, you have people who want to have a fallout about them, but the football organization said they support, the police and whatnot, but they also support their players' the right to have freedom of speech. So, you know, those are some new things that are going on with this thing tonight. So I guess we can open the floor and just get everybody's feelings on where they feel and stand tonight. As LaShondra said, on the protest that is happening around the country, you know, or whether or not we think it's going to lose steam. But there's a lot of planning going on as we speak. They got all kinds of stuff planned in other cities around the country. And, yeah, they're continuing to do that march. So we can just open the floor and let's get to what we were, where we started, where we left off last time.
Okay, wonderful. Carol, I just wanted to know if they had so many witnesses, and you said that was intention to confuse the jurors or the grand jury before they tried the case, right?
Right. They had, that's okay. Who they, when they did the grand jury to prosecute the cop, they just brought, they just bombarded the jury with so much information and so many people. You think about 62 witnesses.
Okay. And they didn't narrow them down to whether they were just making up stuff, and was everybody's testimony the same, or was it, did they do different synopses of what really happened?
Well, what they're finding out in the transcript, they didn't vet these witnesses before. They just, somebody came and said that they saw something, and they just brought them on in. That's what the prosecutor did. And they didn't vet them to see if they were credible, to check out their stories as if it made sense or anything. They just brought those people in, and now they're finding out, now that they've disclosed the documentation and the proceedings on the case, they're finding out that those people were lying because they checked. Some people weren't even there when the shooting happened that actually did a testimony. So now they're finding that out after the fact. And that's the kind of thing that happens, that, you know, if you just overload and overwhelm the jurors, I mean, they got confused, and then so many people were lying that even some of the jurors had to ask them the same thing, were you even there? You know, and that kind of thing. And so now that the paperwork is coming out, that's another issue.
Okay. Well, let's go to the film that they keep showing on the TV and CNN. I was watching the cameras that they had in the store when the little guy reached over and did something to the cashier, and then the cashier followed him out of the store asking him, I guess was telling him, don't do that or whatever. Do you think that was a correct image for them to show to the people to make that decisions that they made?
Well, what they referred to that was a strong arm robbery at the time. He didn't have a weapon or nothing on him at the time. He was in that grocery store. He took something, and he didn't pay for it, and they were trying to stop him from going. And he's a big guy. So he just basically pushed the guy off, and that's what they call a strong arm robbery. And on that note, they did play that particular film on that prior to the grand jury being assembled and all that kind of stuff to project a negative image of it, so that it would give. So you're thinking if people, even people who were on the jury, probably saw that and thought, okay, he was already breaking the law, he was a hoodlum. So sure, he wasn't being compliant with the police, and that's why he got shot. So there was already a preconceived notion built in the minds of individuals who saw that film. And I'm not justifying his action and saying that he was right. He was wrong for that. If they felt like the man in the store should have called the police, he could easily identify him. He was on case. So if he wanted to get arrested for stealing maybe whatever that was, something equivalent to a candy bar or something like that, which would have been a minor thing, then, yeah, he was guilty of that. They should have saw him for that. But that wasn't what they shot him for later on in the streets. He was walking down the street minding his business, and the police officer called him over to the car, and he just picked him out and called him over to the car. And that's, you know, like they say, suspicion or whatever, they can call you out and ask you to stop or come over.
Oh, wow. That's another thing, huh, that they had to bombard the jury with, too, because if they just told them, well, hey, come here, we think you did something, so now, but we're going to shoot you. And is that how it happened? That part I didn't see.
The young man, Gary, who was with him, who was with Mike Brown, was with him, whose story is the only story that's been consistent throughout this entire jury. he is saying that they were walking and he called him over. He was being compliant. He wasn't resisting. He had his hands up and the man shot him. The story was that the young man had reached into the car to take the police admission of the story that Mike Brown reached in the car to take his weapon from him, and he felt like he was a rag doll being thrown around, so to speak. And then everything started to proceed out of the car, and then Mike Brown was walking away from him, and he told him that he shot him at four times at that point when he was reaching into his car. And like a lot of people say, I mean, this guy is just as big as he is. And that Mike Brown had struck him in the face. Well, when you see his pictures on television, a lot of people say a guy Mike Brown's size, if hitting him, he just had redness on his cheeks. He wasn't swollen, he wasn't bruised, he wasn't anything. But a guy that size that's hitting you twice that you felt like was beating, should have had every. A lot of people who are doctors and they're saying that they've been hit by people like that and they're that size. He should have had way more damage than that. But according to him, he was hit. And that's why he felt his life was in danger. And that's why he emptied his gun at that point, because he shot him four times prior to, and then he emptied his gun on him. He was down on his knees, but he shot him in the top of his head. So, I don't understand the whole, I know you were scared, so when you shot the first four times, but after that, you're going to empty your revolver on him? That part I just don't get.
That one I don't understand either, because that's like rage to me. You know, you know the man is already down, so why would you shoot him, empty the rest of your pistol on him? You know, that didn't make much sense, and then you get no bill for that. Now that's another injustice. You know, that's really going on today. And like we had the other shooting that happened a few weeks later from that, you know, because of rage. What is wrong with these police? You know, what could be the problem?
You know, and that's what most people are talking about. You know, because when you talk about, I mean, we watched on nationwide TV, everybody watched Eric Garner be killed in a chokehold. And they have played on words and say it was a takedown maneuver. But I say a chokehold by any other word or name is still a chokehold. I mean, you're not going to sit here and tell us we didn't see the man being choked to death. And even the autopsy said he was choked by crushing his larynx where he couldn't breathe. He was choked to death, and they ruled it a homicide. So I'm not understanding why the police, and it's nothing against the police. Let me say this right here. Let me read my disclaimer and preface this whole thing. We're not against the police. I don't think any of the black people in the community are against the police. We do look for them to come when we call them if something is wrong. And we really, I think, by and large, I think a lot of people in the community want to trust the police. But the police use their discretionary powers, the policemen are given, to call, if they want to say you're suspicious and approach it, they get to do that. And so, you know, but, and I ain't mad at the police. Like at this point, you know, they got a tough job to do. And we talked about that last time with the teacher saying how disrespectful some young men are, and then some of them do come. But I would argue that even when they're not disrespectful with the police can, they take it upon whatever their attitudes are toward young black males, Latinos, or even poor whites, or whites in general, whatever their attitude is at the time, that's how they're going to be. And some of them are power happy and gun and trigger happy, and some of them just are going to, you know, abuse their power. So, and if they have their own agenda, we said this about, you know, rape victims. You know, the woman said, "What could I have done to have been different from being raped?" You couldn't have done nothing different. If he has his agenda, that's what he's going to do. And so that's exactly the way I see it. And so the police officers, and here's what I want to say about that. There are a lot of good officers, but I need the police to stop acting like there is no such thing as a bad cop, because there
is. Right. That's true. And you see it every day now, because they're so blatant with it, they don't even – you know, try to hide it anymore. It seems like that if they want to do what they want to do, they do it. And that's what, and it shows. But you know what that really got me? I'm going to tell you that what really got me then, I'm going to expound on this. if this man is saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, why are you still choking him? And you already have him on the ground. That is what I could not understand. And
you say they did
nothing wrong.
You did the nail right on the head. They keep sitting on television saying they didn't choke him. It was a takedown maneuver. But you had him on the ground, though, and you were still choking him.
Choking
so the takedown maneuver, if that's what you want to call it, now you got him on a takedown maneuver. Now you got him on the ground, so he's down now. So why is the takedown maneuver still in effect, i.e. choking him?
Yeah, right. Why? What was that for?
You're aggressive toward him. You wanted to prove something. You were a gung-ho cop, and you killed that man on nationwide TV.
Right.
And let's go.
TV.
And we have another question.
Right, and then you go to the grand jury, and you get no bill for murder in broad daylight.
None.
And what does that say about the justice system? What does that say about forceful cops? What does that just give them the privilege to go on?
And to your point, there may be the reason why police officers are able to do what they do, because they know that there's a fat chance that they're going to be prosecuted. We have to remember, prosecutors work with policemen all day long to catch the bad guy. And it's the same prosecutor who then has to prosecute their friends who are police officers. So they're not going to be anxious to put their friends behind bars that they've been working with for years in catching and putting bad guys behind bars. So that is why that one of the changes that is being called on by the public is that we don't use the prosecutor that they work with to do the grand jury thing. We get an outside special investigation prosecutor to come in and do that, that doesn't know these cops, that doesn't work with them every single day, and therefore we'll get a partisan, you know, chance at having a decent trial. Now, as far as the scales of justice, you're right. They've been broken. They didn't broke it. It burnt up and thrown in the back of the house somewhere. So we, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, to me, there's no justification. Even if he is a fellow police officer, you've been knowing this man for 20 years. If he did wrong, he did wrong. That was just wrong. And everybody said. So I don't see how that's justified through the police department. I'm just baffled with that. I'm not a law student, and I don't know much about it, but I don't understand how you get away with that.
Wrong when you see wrong, though. We all have to be educated right from wrong, and then we don't have to be educated to know what our eyes see. So we're all sitting there looking on television. It's equivalent to the 1960s Civil Rights Movement when the world saw on camera when the white police officer let the German Shepherd dogs and the water hose out on those kids in Birmingham, Alabama.
We have to remember
now we're seeing that same image, just a different way of doing it this time. Mm-hmm. And the reality is everything about Eric Garner's case was wrong from beginning to end. Now, they had caught him selling Lucy's, which is just loose cigarettes on the street. Somebody wants a cigarette. He'd sell them one cigarette with a dollar. He'd been making a little extra money on the street by doing that. And they had gotten into him with that about that. But that day, he was not selling Lucy's. He was not selling the loose cigarettes. In fact, he had just come from across the street breaking up a fight, i.e. Peacemaker, breaking up a fight and coming over to the other side of the street and just was standing there. And they came up to him and decided that they would mess with him.
And just throw him to the ground. And he just walked up to him and threw him down. I mean, caught him from back, from behind, and just threw him down. Now, that is just atrocious. That didn't even make good sense to me.
And
why
the
would
sad
you do
part
that?
About this, that goes on across our country every single day. And that's the question maybe we should pose to our argument. The majority of the times this happened, it does happen to African-American people. But it also happens to our brown brothers and sisters. And last week on Congress, Latinos and African-Americans and Muslims, all people of color, congressional staff workers stood on the Capitol front steps with their hands up in protest. And that just lets you know how serious this is getting, how people in particular areas and important statuses and positions are saying, we got to change what's happening here. They staged a walkout. Congressional staffers, they staged a walkout, and they walked out onto the front steps of the Congress booth, and they all stood there with their hands up. And here's the thing, because what we know is that it does happen to African Americans most of the time, and it does happen to Latinos, and it does happen to whites. And so maybe that's a question, like some people say, is this a race issue? No, this is a police brutality issue, abuse of power, over-aggressiveness in their approach to people. You don't have to be aggressive. There's all kinds of other things that could have been done. We talk about the stun gun that they used, the little, it could have done that. They got rubber bullets nowadays. They got all types of little things. And that's the other thing, one of the other things that they're calling on for change, where we start talking to people before we escalate it to something physical. So let's talk to them. Let's reason with them. Let's hear what they got to say. Let's let them hear what the cops have to say, and let's diffuse it. Let's learn to talk to each other and diffuse it and stop going in being cops who are afraid, because cops have said they admit to being afraid. And, you know, sometimes fear will make you do some things that you probably shouldn't do, you know. So they said, let's start talking about, and they were even talking about how some people they're doing something, bringing in the wife maybe to talk to the husband if he's upset, you know, bringing in those kind of things into the equation so that they can diffuse it as opposed to just bum rushing a person, escalating it so quickly and being so aggressive. And I think it's just an abuse of power and aggressive thing. And I think, again, it happens mostly in the black community, which is a problem, but it does happen with other people of other races, and I just think it's just an abuse of power and aggressiveness in their approach.
Well, let me ask this question, and then I see we have a couple of other callers online that might want to ask a question or make a comment, and certainly we need to hear from Ms. Bev tonight. She needs to go ahead and give us her take, but my question is one more, is that do you think that in the judicial system, you said that the comrades, colleagues of these officers, don't want to see their comrade or colleague prosecuted. But do you think money has to do with any of that? Maybe they're being bribed not to put out a conviction, you know, like through the grand jury, you know, undercover, down low, or behind the scenes. What do you think about that?
It's apparent that money has nothing to do with it other than they're just looking out for each other. You know, policemen, they look out for each other. They don't tell on each other. And the prosecutors, they go hand in hand, because if they prosecute someone and that kind of thing, then they get a bad relationship with other cops, because it's like, you know, being they like snitching. So it's like, you know, they don't want that situation. They at that point, the cops won't be willing to work with that prosecutor anymore and hunting down that bad guy and bringing the evidence that they need to put somebody behind bars. So they don't want to do that. And the reason why, another reason why I say it's not a money issue is because they have no problem with paying out these wrongful debt suits. And that's millions of dollars for wrongful debt suits, for police brutality, because where they settle with families for large amounts of money. So the city, it would rather take that hit than put a cop who's killed someone wrongfully behind bars. But, you know, cops, it's like they look after each other. Policemen look after each other. They can turn a deaf ear and a blind eye to some stuff going on to protect their fellow cops, and prosecutors are their partners in putting people behind bars. And so, you know, that's just what that is, and that's how it works.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just wondering if that was the case with money, behind the scenes factor. That's what I'm gonna call it, and that we're not gonna prosecute because we're gonna pay you off not to say nothing about this, because
if that were the case, sister, prosecutors would be living large and in charge. You know, Mothers Against Police Brutality report that in the state of Texas alone, a cop hasn't been prosecuted for killing an unarmed man since 1976.
Oh, my.
We ain't got that kind of money to be paying on prosecutors. Okay. Also, they report since 1976, a police officer who has killed an unarmed person in the state of Texas has not been prosecuted since 1976. And that's a long time ago.
Okay, well, I guess so. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and ask Beverly, or I see we have Minister Williams. Are you on the line?
Yes,
no.
I am.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate your support. Do you have any comments tonight?
Yes, one moment.
Okay. Beverly, you get ready because we need to hear from you. As soon as Minister Williams gets finished, we need to hear what you say.
Well, you know, from the conversation we had last week, you know, talking about the attitudes of the students, and we're still on that subject, or we're just talking about, I heard the young lady mention a lot of different things tonight and just enjoying the show. You know, by me working in the school system, you know what I see and what I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis at the school. And I've really been trying to really catch up the young people's hearts and let them know how serious this thing is. I think, you know, Lewis and those who are on the line, you know, our kids think things are such a joke.
Right.
Okay.
You know, they're played with it. You try to tell them their mindset. I just sit back and I saw a lot of different things today as I was teaching the students. Times totally has changed. I am like, wow, really? And then you tell them, you teach them, you say, hey, guys, you know, taking this approach, I had students they just fly mouth. They are very fly at the mouth, very disrespectful. Have no respect for authority, none. And we why this stuff goes on with the police and how they are getting off the hook. You know, when I heard a young lady talking about when they go, you know, the prosecutors and this and that and the other. What do you think? And this is a question. Why are you thinking they're getting off?
Again, there's a camaraderie between the police and the prosecutors. You have to understand that when the prosecutor is building a case against someone, they have to rely on the police to go out and get the witnesses, go out looking for the person that may can help their cases, go out and find the bad guy that they're looking for that would help exonerate somebody else over here. And so they need the police's help to help them win cases. And they can't, and so there's a particular type of relationship or bond or whatever you want to call it that's established between the prosecutor and the police. And so that's like they're buddies. I mean, they're happy that the police has helped them out in their cases to prosecute someone. So they owe the police. So when the police comes in there that's helped them for many years past and they're old friends and they have barbecues together, and they come in there because they've shot somebody in wrongful death, then that prosecutor, he's not going to be too quick to say, I'm going to have to put you behind bars, man. No. If anything, he's probably saying, don't worry about it. You know, we'll take care of it. You know, because they're friends. They're partners. They work together as a team. So all of a sudden now you have to turn on your teammate and you're charged with prosecuting him. And that's the problem with the justice system, how it's set up. They let the prosecutors, the same prosecutors who work with the cops, have to do the prosecution of the cops, and that just doesn't work because he can't be impartial. He really can't.
Right.
Well, girl, let me ask you this then. Well, why are they going ahead and prosecuting this guy that's over in, was that Fort Worth or Rockwall or Forney or somewhere, that killed the wife and the man for that fired him? You know, he was an attorney. He got fired for stealing stuff from the police department. Now, they're giving him, they're doing his sentencing now. So, is that a difference between them and the cases that go on between the black killings and the, you know,
yeah,
you know what?
Yeah,
are,
there's
you,
a difference.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Well, what would
that,
be the
that's
difference?
Like that. The difference is that's what you call going postal at work because they didn't caught you doing something. That's just going postal. He just went postal at work because they fired him because he probably was already mad at him, maybe he didn't get a promotion or something like that. And, yeah, they worked together, but it wasn't the same thing as a – do you know what it is for a policeman to go to prison? Like, that's something kind of different because he going to go and be in jail with people he didn't mess with on the streets and he didn't done all kinds of streets. So that's his life if he goes down. The prosecutor knows, the police officer knows. No, this guy was on the job. He was stealing. He got caught, and they fired him. And what happens with a lot of people who have gone on the job and got posted, when they get fired, they got fired, they got mad, they went back and shot the people who were responsible for firing them and in their minds, ruining their lives. So there's a difference. In this case, in that case, they may not have been together and helped each other, worked in the same department or whatever the case may be. They may not have had backyard barbecues. They probably didn't like each other on the job. But with prosecutors and police, they work together very well, very strongly. They know who they can call on, what cop to call. Hey, I got this case. I need so-and-so. Can you get that? Can you find that for me? Or we own it. And then they're out there on the streets to get what that prosecutor needs. So they have a very give-and-take relationship. So they're close,
okay.
And that's a difference.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't misreading that because, of the difference in the cases. But, yeah, that's a lot of stuff going on that side also. You know, you say just postal. I can relate with that, okay. But, Beverly, are we going to hear from you tonight? Mr. Williams, were you finished?
Oh, yeah, I was done. That was an interesting question you brought up about, you know, the wife killing, you know, what she said. It's very interesting to see what his sentence, they're talking about putting him to death. They will give him, well, probably so because, you know, they're not looking at the color. They killed, a prosecutor and then another one and his wife. So, he's a prosecutor.
Yeah.
He works for them, you know.
That's
so,
right.
I think it's a little bit more to that story as well.
Yeah, and it's officers of the court. So they view that as like killing a cop. So they're officers of the court. And it's the same thing as killing a cop. And so besides that, it was, it appeared to be the way he did it. It was well planned out, very, very premeditated, very well planned, very, very pulled together. And when you go through, as you can say, a lot of intent and a lot of planning and everything like that, that makes the case even stronger. And you kill somebody for them to look at the death penalty for you. And this is the state of Texas. We kill more people on death row than anybody in the country. I was down at SMU signing Christmas cards for people on death row, and there are approximately 300 people on Texas's death row right now. So I was my hand hurt when I got through, and so that's where we're at in Texas.
So his consequences won't be as bad as if a police officer goes in as with what's going on with that murder case, right? So what I'm saying is the prosecutors and the ones that kill the black people or whatever that's going on, his case won't be as bad as the murder case of the three people, right? As if he goes in.
Well, Eric Garner, that's on nationwide TV. It was taped. We watched a man being killed. And the sad part about that, even after they were killing him, he was unconscious. And then they didn't even render aid. They had a EMT show up. She checked his pulse. She checked no other vital signs. And then she says, Mr. Williams, wake up. Mr. Garner, wake up. He was already dying. And they said you can check a pulse, and the person can be dying or dead and still have a pulse that's a faint pulse that eventually will come to a stop. So the EMTs, and when she got there, he wasn't even properly medically addressed when they got there. So that's even that made it even worse. So
CPR.
They didn't try to get CPR. They didn't check any other vital signs. That's on the tape. The thing about it is this was taped, and we all saw it with our own two eyes. And so you're not going to tell us you're not going to tell us nothing else went on because we saw it for ourselves. And so, and that's another issue maybe everybody want to talk about. Do you think that putting body cameras on these cops will make a difference? And this guy who killed the officer of the court and things like that, I mean, I'll be clear, you know, when it's white-on-white crime, oftentimes the sentences can be less. But when it's a planned out, you know, killing, you know, meditated, premeditated, that kind of thing, those normally go up for higher sentences. So life with no parole and things like that. And they felt like because they killed him and then killed the wife, who was basically, I guess, an innocent bystander, it was a bit much. So they are going after the death penalty. Now, as far as Eric Garner's concerned, had the cop been prosecuted correctly, we might have seen some of that. But you got to understand, that goes back to white-on-black crime and white-on-black murders. And it statistically shows that when a black kills another black, he gets a lesser sentence than he would if it was a black person that killed a white person. And that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let me ask you a question.
Do you think it's going to ever stop?
Right. Well, let me ask you a question about Gardner. We all saw what happened when they tried to talk with him. He cursed at the officer, right? Is what I saw.
He told them that he did say a curse word, but he let them know, I wasn't doing anything. I was just standing here minding my own business. Again, like I said, he had just come back from across the street to break up a fight, and he was right to be a little frustrated and upset that you're coming over here to mess with me when she was. Everybody says that, even the store owner, he was saying he wasn't doing anything. So he was upset, and he was talking back to them. And that goes back to some people looking at that, was he being compliant or him arguing with the police? But you got to understand, weeks before that, they had been messing with him. So they had been messing with him multiple times before. And so on this day, he decides, no, I'm tired of y'all. He says it. I'm tired of y'all messing with me. And today, I'm not even selling these Lucy's. I'm just sitting here, standing here, minding my own business. And he didn't move to be aggressive. And in fact, they moved on him. And that's the way it happened.
Wasn't he resisting when they came to him? Was he resisting? I was trying to, because it was on the video. I mean, worldwide,
right.
Facebook.
Now
that's why I saw it. It's on Facebook. Was
right.
he resisting the arrest or walking? I saw him walking away. It's unacceptable behavior, the way the police officer did him, and he said he couldn't breathe or whatever. Yeah, and I think at some point that if someone, but I asked my son's father, because he's a detective, and I asked him what was his opinion about it and then the shootings, and I asked him why can't they shoot to bring them down. He said they're trained to kill, because if they're feeling threatened, then they don't. I said, well, you know, he said that's just it. He says, Brenda, we're trained to kill. I mean, if a police officer felt like he's under threat, of course he's going to react. I mean, this is what he said, being an officer. And I wanted to ask him that, you know, what is it? Why can he shoot him in the leg? Why couldn't he do this to bring the guys down and stuff like this? Why do you have to shoot to kill? He said, that's the way it is. They're trained to kill if they're threatened. If they feel threatened, by any means, they're going to shoot to kill you.
Right.
So
and he's right. Go ahead, dear.
Go ahead, Brenda.
Does she have a question? And he's right. He's right. They do train them that if they feel like their life is threatened, then they can retaliate in a way that will result in the person's death being killed themselves, rather them than the cops save your life, so to speak. But in this instance, Eric Garner was not resisting. He was not under arrest, so there was no resisting it, because he was not under arrest. They were just coming over and harassing him. He was telling them to leave him alone, and then the cop who choked him to death, they were standing there because of his presence. He's a large black man. And so all of them come over there and approach him. And then when the guy did grab him, he grabbed him from behind. So he was talking to the other cops and saying, just leave me alone, I haven't done anything. And the other cop goes behind him and puts him in a chokehold, what they call a takedown maneuver, to bring him down. Now, I get it. I have an investigative friend for many years down at the district attorney's office in Dallas. And I was in his office one day, and he says to me, you know, I got to get, you know, they were talking about getting larger guns. And I said, why you need to go? He said, because these kids out here, they're armed to the teeth. And his thing was, which I find very common amongst a lot of police officers, after many, many years on the job, which is another change they're asking for, let's have a cop psych evaluated before you hire them, while they're working there, and do some checkpoints on that. Because I feel like they become desensitized. After you see so much negativity and so much of the bad, you become desensitized. And that's how I felt a friend of mine as a detective was. He said, Carol, he said, these kids will kill you. They'll kill you just as soon as they look. He says, I'd rather kill a kid before he kills me first. And that's just the way it was. Now, by all importance and certain intents, certain things, this guy's usually a very nice guy. But to not give second thought to shooting a child, you know, that troubled me a little bit. I know you gotta get to, if you see so much of the same thing, you can become desensitized to it. And so after that, you just harden. And so you killing and shooting anything that comes. So to kill a kid, not think about it, that was a bit much. But yeah, he's right. They said if you get into a situation where you gotta be you or them, yeah, you know, shoot to kill. But I think that there are a lot of measures that a lot of police officers are using out there where you don't have to kill them. They have stun guns that they shoot them with, that shoots as electricity through their body. It takes them down no matter what size they are. They have rubber bullets. You know, they have all kinds of things now, pepper spray. They have all these things to their excess to do that and disarm the people without having to shoot every time you turn around.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say this last
thing.
I'm going to have someone else to move on. I want to ask this as you were talking. The problem that these officers are having, they have these kids, these people have lost respect for the police. They have lost respect for authority. I just want to say police officer. They are in this day and time we're living in, the as Timothy stated in the word, that we're living in the last days, that kids will be disobedient and rise up against their parents. You know, all of this stuff that is happening, they do not fear authority anymore. Anytime that you stop by a police officer, it's, even if they're picking on you, stopping you for whatever reason, it's better for you to hand over what they ask you for, because your fly mouth and your disrespectful would get you killed real quick. And like I say, you know, wrong for IT young black men, unfortunately, to be gunned down like the way they are. But you have to do a soul search, how they are at home, how they are toward their mothers, how they are toward the people they respect. It goes just further than just, oh, my kids were shot down. Like I told my son, if you ever get stopped by any officer out there, you better do what they ask you to do, because they're not playing. They're not playing.
Right.
If they stop you, hand over what they're asking you. If they're shooting you because you hand over your license and your insurance, and they shoot you because you are black and you haven't said anything to this cop, then it's a real bad situation. But if you're cussing them out, bucking up to them, and saying different things that you shouldn't say to authority, it's like I say, it's just not the officers, the white officers, black officers. It's everywhere. These kids don't fear nothing.
Nothing.
You're right.
They don't fear anything. They in school, smart mouth, cuss you out, disrupt your class as if you're not even standing there. I had two going back and forth, and you wouldn't have, I don't want to do it. You know, oh, what, really? And you wonder, I really don't, guys, pray for me, because I see a lot of stuff, and it just makes me wonder why, you know, this stuff is happening and why they're protesting and why all of this stuff is taking place. It is a lot. I'm just in prayer. I am just so in prayer. Asking God to do whatever.
Yeah, and I'll be praying for you too, sister. But can I ask you this question? Because this is what I kind of find interesting about your perspective. I think it's a very interesting and very formative and introspective that you give us, that you see the attitudes of these young kids, and that's part of the problem why the police can be so aggressive, you know. And it's not guaranteed that if they're being nice with the police that the outcome's going to be. But to your point, if they are respectful, it may keep the situation from going from bad to worse. But this is what I want to ask your question, because this is what I think is so unfair with educators like yourself in school. I mean, what is that principal doing to help, you know, protect the teachers that he or she employs in that school? Because I think that it is the principal's responsibility, and it's a whole other show, but to think it is the school's responsibility, the principal, to make sure that you don't have to come on your job every day and feel like you may have to defend yourself physically one day. What does that principal, or what is that principal? I have a nephew who is a principal of a high school or a junior high school, and he has a zero tolerance. And so anytime a student, you know, mouths off at a teacher in any way disrespectful, they out of there. And he'll put them out and the parent out too and call the police. And that's just the way it is. And he's established that reputation, that culture at their school. So now the children and the parents understand, if you come in here with that nonsense, you know, and he reads his bylaws and he knows what he's within the laws to do things, and if you're going to get aggressive and get all riled, he gets security, he gets the police, and you're escorted off the campus and take your son with you because he or she is expelled, and we're not having it here, because it disrupts the education of other children who are trying to get their education. And I'm a firm proponent of people, when you start messing up somebody else's opportunity to get a good education, then you got to go, because you're not gonna mess my child up. So if there's a bad child in my kid's class and it's disrespectful, I have a conversation with them, because look here, y'all need to get rid of him, because he's denying this child a right to an education, and that's a right that every child has in the United States. So to you, I just was wondering what does the principal, the head of the school, and their management style do to support and protect you children, you teachers, you educators, from the nonsense that you see in your classroom every day?
And that is a good question, because these are where the educators are basically trying to get together. You know, the Bible clearly states that money is the root of all evil.
Ain't it?
So it becomes, when a child misses and gets kicked out of school, then it's no longer care for the kids and the behavior. It's you keep them in the classroom. And that's part of the problem, that I don't understand good leadership that would allow anybody that's over a school, a superintendent, whatever the position is, administration, when you don't have administration to back you up. The only thing that you do is you send them out and they come right back in. We had a student that called another teacher a nigger, a white man, a nigger. And he didn't get any. It's no consequences. I don't understand. I am just so appalled at a lot of things that I see administration don't do.
And
you have this behavior, you need to put these kids out. They have a behavior issue. You need to send them to an alternative school because they can no longer function in a public school. So
we are
having a big issue here. I told these teachers, I said, while they're protesting about this, we need to be protesting, because I believe this is where this behavior starts. See, people want to go do this side over here and talk about the white officers and this, and that, and the other. Officers already are scared of black folks anyway.
Yep.
You have half of these white people right here wouldn't say a word. They take the abuse from these students. They buck up to these students, and it makes me mad when I see my own African-American black boys and girls buck up to the black African-American teachers. They have no respect for whites. They have no respect for the blacks. They get in class, they cut up, miss. You know, I ain't doing this, miss. And then you have these directors of the AD department, which you would think that the athletic director would get these boys in line and make sure that they go. It's like they co-sign for the bad behavior.
Right.
So when you say administration, I don't see administration backing up the teachers like the administration should back up. They always want to say, I had one white woman to walk into my class when I was straightening out and telling them X, Y, Z. She walks in here and say, these are good kids. What's good about them? It's nothing good about these kids that sit up here disrespecting the teacher. This was a white woman. Oh, these are good kids here. You have good students. No, ma'am, because I just had one to sit up, and I don't play. I put them out. I call their mothers. I do not play. You would not be in my room. You are only in here for 48 minutes. And if I have to spend 37 and a half minutes telling you to be quiet while others, I sit back and watch today. These kids are ADHD all the way, or they just don't care about learning. I had one student sitting, I wish there was a camera, one student licking his tennis shoe all on the floor when I'm up teaching. One student twirling his head, combing his hair in the classroom, doing other stuff, but engaging in what I'm teaching them. And you want to talk about the teachers have to go get certified because of what if these students that are not learning. Administration, superintendent, whoever, they need to actually be in these classrooms and give these kids consequences behind their behavior and letting them know if you get stopped by an officer, because you're not respecting the teachers. So I look at them and I'm like, my Lord, you're going to have to help these kids because they are very disobedient. I don't play the mess. I had fly them out and I put them out. You know, disrespect me. I'm not here to take your abuse and you're not going to abuse me. When they come in my classroom, they are quiet. I am going to have classroom management, regardless if you want to learn or not, but you're not keeping one or two that wants to learn. But I say to answer your question, administration really needs to back up the teachers. They need to get a hold of the behaviors that we're experiencing in the classroom. I heard teachers down the hall, everything come out of their mouth, is this kid disrespectful? This kid is disrespectful. Everything that you hear, it's disrespectful. Everything. They don't care. That's what we are. They do not care. And we're wondering why our young people are dying. All six died in a car accident. None of them make it. Shot down at a party. You wonder why.
Yeah.
It just makes me wonder.
Yeah.
And then they get on TV, say he was a good kid, but they got videos where he's bullying and pushing folks. And then you got, oh, well, he was a good kid, where he's cursing and saying, stop bothering me and this and that and the other. No, I do not condone, and I'm not saying this, and I hope no one takes it wrong. It just makes me think about, why did it lead to this?
It's a good point you bring up. It's a very good point in that the behaviors at an early childhood level can, you know, lead to escalated confrontations with figures of authority, starting from the school, ending up on the streets in front of a police officer. And you mix that attitude with a bad police officer who's aggressive and abusive of power, and that is the recipe for being a black child being shot on the street. You're exactly right. That's another ingredient to the situation, and it's not always the case, because there have been some good kids on the street that were doing the right thing and didn't do anything and was just shot and killed. But to your point, if you do have a lot of children who haven't been trained in the home, who have no home training, who have no respect for authority, and I think about you talk about how the young men call the teachers Miss, and LaShondra can attest to this. We worked with young men at the halfway house facility for young men who have been incarcerated, and that's exactly how they address us. Something tells me that there maybe some of the young men in your class may have had a trip or two down through there, and that's why they know that term Miss, because that's exactly how the ones that are in Texas Youth Commission halfway house that have come from the state school for boys addresses us in our Bible studies that we have for them. Now, that said, you know, these young men, and it, you're right, it starts early before we even get to that, and we already know that the police are going to act the way that they're going to act. And there are some bad cops. There's a lot of good cops, but there are some bad cops. But you bring those two together, and it's a recipe for a disaster. I'm not ever going to, and to your point, I hear what you're saying. I don't think that you're, you know, validating a bad cop killing children. But at the same time, I hear what you're saying when you say, but we have to teach our children that they do need to respect authority. And if they don't respect it at home, and if they don't respect it in the classroom, they're certainly not going to respect it when they come face-to-face with a police officer who's gung-ho for killing them as quick as they can look at them.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
That's true. And the kids today, they don't fear death. They don't fear consequences.
No.
They don't fear. They don't reverence. They don't. They just like whatever. You know.
Their comment
whatever.
Is you can only kill. Their comment is you can only kill me once, and that's how they feel about it. You can only kill me
once. That's really crazy.
That's a crazy mindset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am going to blame again, as we did last week. I'm going to take this stand. You took prayer out of the school.
Yeah.
That did it. You took discipline out of the schools. That did it. As mm-hmm. long as you spare that rod, you're going to have some terrible children. And I'm just
but
telling
you.
Also, and I'm just saying.
Yeah. And I want to add to that.
It is what it is.
Also, yeah, but I want to add to that. You also took the black fathers out of that home. And you mass incarcerated them. And then so the mother is left with these boys who, for the most part, a lot of them come up with anger management problems. To your teacher, and then like the educator said, a lot of children are ADD. Now, I got to say this about the whole ADD thing. Y'all remember when we were kids, if you had ADD, your mama didn't pick up that switch. Boy, that was not. We didn't take no pills or nothing.
We didn't have no ADD.
Yeah, no pills. Well, no ADD. You better get your ADD in that house.
You
know,
I made this in the McDonald's. Get that ADD space out of you. That's what you're going
to
do. You ain't
going to
have no ADD when I get through. Okay?
Okay. That was the cure for ADD back in the day. They look at you. All that skylocking you was doing, you went somewhere and sat down. It's what you did. And now the kids are... They diagnosing them with ADD and this and that, no 9 yards, but the reality,
you give them different pills and all this kind of stuff.
But that's to their point. Spare the rod, and spoil the child. That's what the Bible told us. That's what you do for ADD.
Did they have some ADD back then? Come on.
That's why he said spare the rod.
Well, you know why it's ADD. You know why it's ADD? It's because it's not even about ADD. You know what I mean? It's because they don't like to learn. So if I told it today, if I put a game up here, I bet you guys will be still enough to work that game. And you know what they did to me? They started laughing.
Because they know it's true.
Because they know it's the truth. They've been on pills before. And now they're off the pill, they approach aggressive behavior. So it's really a bummer. I don't agree with it. You just sit yourself down and you sit still for 5 minutes. I had one guy, but tears, cried, because he had to sit for 5 minutes doing nothing. And when he got through with 5 minutes, he literally cried on me. He could be sick. You can do it. You've been sick for 5 minutes. You can do it.
Yeah, and you're right, and I'm not saying that some kids aren't they do have attention deficit disorder. I mean, I have a niece, and she has it. She don't like to take her medicine either, but she's not off the chain. And I found that when I issued punishments on her, it worked. You know, I started taking stuff. It worked. I don't know what her parents and her mom and dad and them had to do. And, you know, to be honest, some kids come from some really, really, like I said, my sister LaShonda can attest to, some really, really bad home places that you surprise why some children are coming to school angry, why some children have the aggressive behavior. They don't see nothing but aggressive at their house. They getting beat down at their house, and they're being cussed out at their house, and they're seeing their mama get beaten, and they're seeing it all, and that's all they know. That's all they know is
environment.
So they come, they bring that, they are a product of their environment. They come down to the school with that same thing. And if we want to talk about it being about money, well, we can certainly throw the school district in there because, you know, anytime a child is not in that seat, you know, they losing money
for that
school and for that district. And quite frankly, my nephew has had many a conversation with me. That's another show about the Dallas school district is that it's too large. It's too big. He says it needs to be broken down into four tiers and get four different superintendents to run each one so that we can get a little bit more attention, and then maybe the teachers like yourself, the educators, can get the management and the protection that they need. So, because I do think that's why a lot of people are leaving the education jobs, because they to your point, they're tired of it. They're tired of nobody defending them, and they have a right. I think, I mean, I think the back in the day, an educator was a very prestigious job to hold, and now they just treat it like it's nothing. These people are bringing our children up and training them who they are to be. And y'all know we grew up with teachers that we can still remember to this day that instill something in us to make us be good and be respectful of people and their property and everything. And, yeah, we've lost that, but we've got to stay careful, and we got to stick in. And I'm glad that even though she's Ms. Williams faces a lot of stuff in her classroom. She's staying with it. And I tell you what, I just believe, and I'm prayerful, and I just believe that the way she's being a warrior in that classroom, it's going to make a difference in somebody's life. And because
somebody's
there was time, somebody, I guarantee it, because they just know that, you know, those kids, Ms. Williams, they used to be so bad in your class, but I heard you, and I see what you're saying. You're right, and I got my life together, and this is why I'm at college, and this is why I'm this. I mean, it makes a difference to have teachers like her who's just still holding down the fort, even without the protection that they need, and teachers should be protected in the classroom, even without the support that she's getting. She's not doing it for the money. She's doing it for the love of the children. But you do get, they get tired. Like I said, this is a whole other show. We have to do this on a whole other show. But at the same time,
we don't have to do it, Cassie. We down to 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you ladies tonight for participating with us tonight. Thank you, Carol, for coming on and giving us the information that you provided us tonight. Thank you, Minister Williams, for joining us and giving us your insight into the things that are going on with our youth today in the school. Beverly, we thank you for being with us tonight, and we're going to go ahead and close the show with a quick prayer from Carol.
Oh, okay. All right. Quick, too. Father God, thank you tonight for bringing us together in fellowship once again for our sister, our friend programming. And we just thank everyone tonight who was on the, giving their input and giving their, because those who just lent us their ears, Lord, we just ask you to continue to bless our children, bless our policemen, bless our judicial system, Father God, that we may learn to come together and respect each other as human beings. You made us all your children. We all belong to you. We all come from you. And it is important that we need to find our way back to that, hopefully, God. So we pray that you guide us in that direction. And we just thank you for all the love and support and the blessings and the grace that you've given us each and every day of our lives and waking us up and watching us over at night. So we give you the glory, we give you the praise and the honor, and only you and you and only God will we do that for. And I ask all of this in the name of Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank
Amen.
You so much, Carol. We love you. Yes. We will be getting back with you on next week.
All right.
Next week's
okay,
show
Bob.
Will be about Thanksgiving and giving and the reason for the season. So everybody get ready, get ready for next week, okay? God bless
All
you.
Right.
Everybody
All
have
right.
a great week.